Hey, everybody, welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I want to welcome you to today's webinar on role-playing customer or collector-consumer conversations. You know, the old saying goes, there's more than one way to skin a cat, and that same can be said for conversations between collectors and consumers. While there may be an overall consensus strategy for how calls should be handled, the actual content of the conversation can vary, but still be effective. Understanding different approaches can help anybody improve their talk off between collectors and consumers. So today in this webinar, which is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning, we have a panel of training experts here to recreate conversations between collectors and consumers and discuss the different ways and best ways to handle common and uncommon situations. As I mentioned, this webinar is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. Peak Revenue Learning's knowledge source will help you can take advantage of the spacing and testing effects. These concepts have proven to be among the most effective methods of learning improvement and knowledge retention. The focused iteration training capabilities of Knowledge Source will have a major impact on employee understanding and application of the skills required to collect more money and the laws and related policies and procedures staff members must be compliant with. You can learn more about them at peakrevenuelearning.com. I'll put a link in the chat that you can use to click on to check out their website. And we're going to hear more from Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning a little later in our program. Let me introduce you now to our participants today. LaDonna Bowling has more than 20 years of operational and compliance experience in third-party debt collection, experience in all verticals, serving creditors and debt buyers. She's a certified instructor for ACA International and currently serves on its board of directors. She's been named one of the 25 most influential women in collections and was ACA International's Certified Instructor of the Year in 2019. Irene Hoheisel has been in the collection industry for more than 22 years. She began as a collector and quickly became head of the collection department, as well as all training, leadership, and compliance for ARSI. Irene has served on multiple ACA committees and has been quoted and published in multiple articles in Collector and Pulse magazines. She's an ACA certified instructor and a source for many due to her extensive knowledge in medical collection and the law that governs. Irene has earned an alphabet soup of designations, certifications, awards, and recognitions for her knowledge in the collection industry. She also serves as president of the Kansas Collectors Association, and she regularly presents seminars for ARSI clients, as well as ACA International, Chambers of Commerce, and many other associations. Christy Lawyer is currently the Uninsured Motorist Training Manager at Wilbur Group. She earned her undergraduate degree in business management from Lincoln College, as well as obtaining associate's degrees in general insurance, insurance services, claims, and claims management through the Institute. Christy assists the Wilbur team with the training and development of its new team members. She's also a trainer specialist for ACA International, and through this association, she holds the designation of professional collection specialist. Our format for today is going to be a little bit different. It's not necessarily a panel discussion. We're going to be presenting different scenarios. We'll have one of our panelists act as a consumer, one act as a collector, and one act as a trainer. They'll actually recreate the scenario, and then we'll spend a few minutes talking about it. We've got a number of different scenarios to go through. If you have any ideas, suggestions, comments, questions, as we're going through these different scenarios today, just drop it right in the chat. We'll see it. We'll be sure to bring it up and incorporate it into our discussion today. All right. With that, let's start. So the first scenario I wanted to throw out there, I think it's one that maybe collectors are hearing more about these days, is someone who can't make payments on their debt anymore because they're spending more money on gas and food, and that is eating up more of their budget. So it's an inflation a topic. So who wants to be our consumer? Who wants to be our collector?
I'll be the consumer. I was going to say I'll volunteer to be the collector this time. We think alike, LaDonna. We got this.
Christy, you're the trainer.
Got All it. Right. So, you know, we'll assume that we've gone through the normal verification. I don't know if it matters if it's an incoming or an outgoing call, but I'll assume we've gone through the normal verification procedures, and we're at that point where it's the collectors attempt to start collecting. So with that, I'll let you guys take it from here.
Well, how would you like to take care of that today? We'll go from there.
I don't have any money today.
Well, I understand you don't have any money, and I'm really sorry to hear that you're feeling that way. I've found that in the past, many people that feel they don't have money for some things just need to rebudget. I'd be glad to help you do that if you could give a few minutes to me.
Look, lady, I don't have hardly enough money to put gas in my car to get to work. they were letting us work remote. Now we can't work remote anymore. And it's costing me twice as much to fill up my tank to go to work. And if you've been to the grocery store lately, I don't know where I can squeeze a dime from.
Oh, I definitely understand how you feel. I feel the same thing. It's been crazy seeing how those gas prices have risen. So many of us have noticed that. And I, like I said before, I really do understand how you feel because I felt the same way. I know that we can come up with something, though, that could help you. Because if I offer you a temporary reduction of your monthly payments for a few months, that might be something to help you stay current and help this account from moving on in the collection process. It could help with the overall balance, too, with less interest accumulating over time than if you were to stop just making payments altogether. And I would hate this to go on to an attorney to review for possible legal action, because that would be our next step here. But if I have a current payment plan in place, I could stop that. So if you and I could just discuss, try to figure out what's reasonable for both of us, I'm sure we can come to an agreement, even if it's just temporary, to avoid anything from happening and keep this account in current collections. What do you think? You think we could work something out?
I don't know, but what's the smallest amount I can pay?
Well, what's the smallest amount you're able to pay?
Well, it depends. You know, you talk about all those other things that could happen. What's the amount of money that I can pay to keep me out of trouble with you guys? Because I know how you debt collectors are.
Well, honestly, LaDonna, what I'd like to do something that will actually help you get this paid. Because if you pay something too small, you do have interest accumulating. And I don't want you to come back a year from now and say to me, I've been paying on this every month and my balance isn't going down. So I would say to make it reasonable, your balance is $500. I know you're saying you don't have much money. Your old payment plan was $100 a month. Do you think that we could split that in half for 3 months and do $50 a month for 3 months? Then we could revisit again, see what your situation is 3 months from now, and maybe increase that payment plan a little bit at that time. What do you think? Does that sound reasonable?
If I can start next month, not this month, because this month, you know, we're already in June. So if we could look at starting this in July.
I wouldn't mind starting your regular payment plan in July, but what could you send me as a good faith commitment before then? Like, let's say in the next 14 days.
$10.
How about we do $15 in the next 14 days, and then after that, we'll start your $50 a month, and I'll keep that going for 3 months. We'll review your situation again in 3 months, and we'll see what you could do at that time.
If I send you 15, that'll leave me 485, and then I'll pay you 150 over 3 months. That'll leave me with 335. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
We can do
so
that.
So, Trainer, what do you think?
I actually thought you did a great job, both sides of it, of course. I did hear a couple things that maybe could have touched on a little bit. I don't have any money today. Okay, maybe when will you have money? When's your next payday? Something along those lines. I was encouraged by the feel, felt, found, like I'm showing empathy, understanding that situation, even the point that, hey, I feel your pain here. And even pointing to the fact that, you know, we can make some changes now, but this is just going to come back to kind of, I don't want to say bite you in the future, but it's not going anywhere. And the escalation of it is more scary than let's work something out now. So I thought that was very, very good.
Yeah, I even explaining consequences.
Exactly. Making it very clear that, yes, we can do something here, but you know that the future, it may affect you even more adversely, especially current climate. We don't really know what's going to happen with inflation. Is it going to become worse? Is it going to get better? Let's get this taken care of now before the future is so unknown that you may be in a worse situation there. Let's get this off your plate, something that you don't have to worry about or deal with anymore. Maybe at that point, a settlement would have been an option. Like, let's get this off your list of things in your budget altogether.
And I do think it's good when, like LaDonna started saying about gas prices. I really think it's important to not ignore when they're explaining the reasons and things that are bothering them, which is why I try to be sympathetic and, yeah, I definitely get it. I understand that, you know. Letting them know I'm a human being too. I also have the high gas prices are affecting me too, without being insulting about it. But it also puts you on an even keel with them to let them know I'm no different than you. I have bills and I have gas that I have to pay for in my car too. And, you know,
it was interesting the thought of, I know how, you know, you collectors are kind of bringing it back like, hey, I'm a person also.
And you know, so I ignored that.
Exactly.
I didn't try to explain you're wrong or change your mind.
Right.
Now, this isn't the time to do it. So I basically, and that's okay. I think that people forget when they're on a call, they don't have to address every single thing a person says if what they're saying really has no value to the conversation. So when LaDonna said, I know how you collectors are, a little part of me giggled. Another part of me wanted to say, you're wrong, but...
That's a battle that,
yeah,
you know,
the best thing is
you've got time to fight it. Another thing I thought was interesting is like turning that conversation around to, you keep telling me what you can't do this, you can't do that, but what can you do? Let's get the conversation going in a more positive direction, and let's get to going with the yeses so that we're able to get a positive outcome.
And understand that first offer is never their best offer. So
exactly.
When LaDonna came back with, well, I could do that $10, you know, so I increased it by just a little bit to $15 to make it where it was something that still sounds reasonable. From $10 to $15 is not going to make as big a difference to them. But do that a couple of hundred times for a couple of hundred people, a couple of thousand people. That $5, $10 adds up to be quite a bit in a month's time. So,
okay, well, let me play devil's advocate here.
Yes.
But you threw all your consequences out there, and you know where I am, and I know a lot of our, you know, attendees, there's no consequences they can throw out there. You know, we all know the law says you can't threaten to do something that legally you can't do what you're
right.
doing. But, you know, the accounts cycle in and out of our shop so quickly, you know, we don't say the collection process is going to continue because we don't know what's going to happen after it leaves us. You know, there's no interest and we're not going to sue. So I think you have to be have a little bit more finesse when you're talking to people mm-hmm. like that. Really don't have anything to throw out there, you know we're gonna
give us some lines, LaDonna. What are the type of thing that you feel you would be able to say when you don't have interest or you don't have anything to throw at them to let them know this is the next step in this process?
I probably wouldn't do it any differently than you did. You know, it's just you know, a lot of empathy and acknowledgement of people's feelings, you know, because I'm a firm believer that we might sit here and say, you know, this person, you know, they're just, you know, shooting me a line, but those are their feelings, and acknowledging them and, you know, looking for the light at the end of the tunnel. That's about the only thing that you can do.
Sometimes I like to not really play on the emotional side of it, but nobody wants that out there. Nobody wants to have this like over their head identifying like, what I hear you saying is you're trying to take care of this. Let's figure out something to take care of this to get this like that burden off. And that kind of can play into some like leverage there. The burden is the leverage, not necessarily.
Let me help you get this off your plate.
Exactly.
There were a couple of comments that have come in. One said, you know, with respect to the legal actions, one said it might have come across as a little threatening. And one sure said it wasn't sure if it was appropriate without knowing the consumer's needs.
Well, this is the way, when you look at our agency, we have on-step attorneys. If that is the next step, we will warn them. And I've had people say to me, even when we've warned them, are you threatening me? And we say, no, we're informing you because that is the next step on this call. And people get more angry when we weren't doing that because they would come back and say, why don't you tell me it was going to go to, you know, have legal action started? They felt like you didn't give me the opportunity to fix it without moving it on to the next step. So if it's an account that is the next step the collector is going to do. You shouldn't say anything like what I said about legal if that wasn't the next step.
Right.
But if that is the next step of what you're going to do, I believe in giving them a heads up because they get to make the choice on the actual actions that are going to happen and not be surprised when it does. So when they get summons to court or get that attorney letter, they're not going to be surprised.
Right. Or I wish I would have known something that.
Right. And we've had that years ago. People used to say, I can't believe I was on the phone with you just a couple of weeks ago. Why didn't you tell me this was going to happen? So we put it in place. If it's your next step, you better say something because
right.
we don't want them to think this isn't going to happen. We want them to be able to make a decision on the actual facts of what's sure. going to be happening next. A
couple other comments. One, the minimum payment with my office is $50 and we don't authorize our reps to use that low of a payment plan. So if a consumer wanted to make a $10 or $15 payment, we would tell them they could pay online or mail in a payment, but we can't set that up over the phone. And active collections would continue until we get a better agreement set up, especially if they had a payment plan that they broke previously.
And that would all be part of your own internal
right.
policies.
Right.
Because we have the same basic where we'll say $50, anything under $50 needs a financial form filled out. So we would need to warrant it. You need to show proof why you can't do more.
And then we had a couple of comments about discovery, you know, sort of asking more probing questions about when people getting paid.
And Jenny made that comment, and I agree with you 100%. You know, we'll go in and acknowledge, so you're having hard times right now. Let's update your file to see what we can work out. You know, using inclusive language, because people want to know, what can you do for them? So,
all right,
you pay it, right, Mike?
Yeah, you have to have that "what's in it for me" attitude on the consumer's part.
And then someone said, if you allow it in your state, take a post-dated payment.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, where you said you can pay in July, take a post-dated payment.
As long as your state and your policies and procedures allow it, FDCPA allows it.
So, all right, exactly. All right, we're going to move on to the next scenario. But before we do, I want to invite Chris Brickman from Peak Revenue Learning, the sponsor of today's webinar, to say a few words. Chris.
Thank you, Mike, and hello, everyone. We're grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides Knowledge Source, the leading knowledge, skills, and compliance training platform for companies with collection operations. Knowledge Source is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training new and existing employees, whether they are on-site or remote. A problem that many organizations share is considering employee development an expense rather than an investment. This view can have detrimental effects on employee morale, motivation, and retention. According to a study by IBM, employees who feel they are not being developed to reach their career goals are 12 times more likely to leave the company they're working for. Most of the folks that we speak to recognize that the old paradigm of onboarding training followed by annual refresher training is really inferior to a model where spaced, repetitive micro-learning produces and promotes much deeper learning and knowledge retention. Everyone is familiar with the rapid loss of knowledge that occurs following training events such as onboarding. By utilizing the focused iteration capabilities of Knowledge Source, your staff members can much more quickly master and then maintain the knowledge and skills necessary for your company to provide high quality and compliant services. Knowledge Source clients are companies that want to build and maintain a really high level of assurance that staff members have mastered and are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge and skills expected of them when interacting with consumers. And Knowledge Source automatically builds documentation of your training efforts for existing clients, prospective clients, and for regulators such as the CFPB. In summary, Knowledge Source will increase revenue, decrease risk, promote accountability, lower the cost of training, and help reduce turnover. To find out more about us, please visit peakrevenuelearning.com or give me a call, Chris Rickman, at 803-521-0031. We are here to help make your job easier and both you and your company more successful. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you, Chris. And thanks again to Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. I really appreciate their continued support. All right. The next scenario I want to throw out there. Here it is. I can't have this show up on my credit report because I'm trying to buy a house. What is the quickest way to get this off my credit report? I can't pay it all off right now. Who wants to be a consumer and who wants to be a collector?
I'll be consumer. We don't report to credit, so.
Okay.
I'll be the collector, and Irene, you be the trainer.
Got it.
All right. Take it away whenever you're ready.
So as you were saying, ma'am, you're trying to buy a house, and what else is going on?
Yes, I've been trying to buy a house for a year now. I finally have everything together, and then all of a sudden, some debt from your company shows up on my credit report. I can't have it there. I need it removed.
Okay. Yeah, the housing market's tough. It's like when you get a house, you better hold on to it. So let me look at your computer. Now, it just showed up on your credit, but, you know, we've been trying to call you and send you letters. Was there, you know, what happens if prevented you from paying this before you get your credit? You know,
I never got a call ever. This is the first time I'm ever hearing of it.
Okay, and let me verify your phone numbers here. And this is your address, and I'm showing that, okay, we mailed the validation notice to you, you know, December 5th, and we didn't put this on your credit until, you know, February, ample time here. So, but the issue is you're trying to get a house. This is going to hold you back. So let's see what we can work out. You want it completely off your credit because, you know, we don't barter payments for, you know, credit bureau removal. But since you're telling me that, you know, you didn't know about it, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And you can pay this when?
It may be maybe next month when I have my some finances freed up from buying the house. It's just really got everything tied up.
So when is your closing?
My finances.
When is your closing?
It's on the 30th.
But you're going to need this off your credit before your closing, most likely.
Is there any way to push it to the next month?
Your closing?
No.
Well, you know,
can you get it removed and then deal with it afterwards?
Ma'am, I can't do that. But what I can do is give you, you know, a little bit of time here to consider your options. You know, what about savings and you put escrow in, right?
We did.
All right. So what about just putting this on a credit card or, you know, something like that? Post-dated check and we'll take care of it.
We can do a post-dated check as long as you wait till my next payday.
And when's that?
The 30th.
Of this month?
Yes.
That's your closing date?
Yes. Can you remove it while you post-date it?
No, we can't do that. Well, you know, I can, you know, show it as disputed because, you know, you did say that you didn't get the notice of it and, but, you know, removal, you know, that's something that we just simply don't do. What about your spouse?
I don't want him to know anything about this.
Well, you might find out at the closing.
Is there any options to settle it or to reduce the amount? I have a little bit that I have saved back to buy a few things for my new house.
Yeah.
But you don't have the full amount.
Right. And those are things you don't need right out the gate anyway. So you just want to get in that new house and feel the newness of it. So you know, the balance is $500. What can you come up with?
Oh, I really only have about $200.
Let me see what this client will allow. Yeah, I can't go down to 200, you know, that's, you know, less than half of it. So, I can give you 30% off of this.
Would you be able to do half?
No, but, I can give you 30% off and that's a pretty good deal here. That's $150 off.
And if I pay it today, how fast will it be removed?
Well, we don't have any control over how fast the agencies, the credit reporting agencies take things off, but typically if we send a file to them or request today, you know, manually requesting it, it, you know, could come off within a week before your closing. I can't promise you that, but, you know, if we expedite.
In the meantime, could I get a letter stating that it was satisfied?
Okay, I'm going to cut in. I think that we've done enough discussing on the topic. If you guys agree. I do think that, you know, we were getting into settlement and full things like that. I want to mention before I comment, because you guys did a great job, and before I comment, there was actually a suggestion that Kimberly made in the chat box that I thought was a great comment. Suggests that they call the lender and add to the amount borrowed and pay it at closing with the closing attorney. And I do agree with things like that. They already have a loan going there and the bank wants to give you the loan and things that actually really is a great tool. But I like that LaDonna tried to show she understood her situation, you know, understood how important it is to get into a house. I love that LaDonna gave some history about like when she sent out letters, you know, not meant, hey, we didn't get any mail return type thing. We sent it to your address. I love that she verified the information. She even gave dates to you about when letters went out and things like that. And LaDonna did really good at repeating back stuff that you were saying. Like when you said, so she goes, well, kind of like, well, let me get this straight. So you want to buy a house, you need this done, you need that done. So it shows two things, that she's listening. I understand what you're saying. I'm not just bypassing what you're saying, and that she's considering. She's trying to figure out what the best option is. It makes the person feel like they're being heard, which keeps the conversation going. So I thought that was really great stuff there. I do love that LaDonna was point blank. She explained they don't credit bar, that we're not going to pay this and take off your credit for that payment. But she did give options. What about your savings account? What about your husband? You want to do a credit card, post a check? So she was brainstorming to try to come up with options, you know, asked about her pay date and stuff like that. But she was very honest saying, no, she can't do certain things. She didn't try to sugarcoat it. And that's one thing that collectors sometimes do. They don't want to say no to somebody. So they hem and haw and they say different things without outright saying, I'm sorry, but we won't credit barter. So things like that. And I do like that settlement came up because you're trying to find another way. Like, for instance, one of the things that we would tell our staff to do is be as honest as possible. Like, if someone were to say to us, well, what do I need to do to get stuff my credit report and buying a house? I would tell them that, well, I can tell you that we accurately report information on your credit report, including zero balance. I recommend you contact them and they can explain their own internal practices of how to treat those trades, what they do with them, including what they do with paid in full accounts. Because we all know as of July 1st, especially with the medical debt, as of July 1st, there's going to be some changes. And these are changes that the credit reporting agencies decided to do. It's not a law, it's not an act, it's nothing like that, not a regulation. They came up with medical debt that they're not going to be reporting medical debt that's less than a year old. They're not going to be reporting any medical debt that's paid in full. But we're still going to be reporting it to them. So I don't want to ever say to them, well, you know, the credit reporting agencies are going to remove paid in full medical debt because that's their practice, not mine. So we have been instructing our staff to say, I recommend you contact them and ask what their own internal practices are. But we'll be reporting accurate information and kind of push it off to them since they're the ones deciding to do this. Let them explain what they're doing so we're not speaking on their behalf. And that might have been something that would have been, if this was a medical debt, I'm not sure what kind of debt this was, but if this was a medical debt, that might be something that would be a good phrase to use. I do think, though, that LaDonna did a great job of listening. But I love the suggestions in the chat box. And if you guys are looking at that, that was pretty awesome. Some of the suggestions they had there, I thought were very appropriate for the situation.
Let me put this compliance warning out there. We all know that this is a sticky, sticky situation to be in, talking about deleting from credit and the CRAs don't want us to do that. You know, we're expected to report accurate information. So that's why I kind of fished for the dispute angle with her, you know, but it's a very sticky situation. And if you don't handle it, you know, well, then, you know, your agency could end up getting into trouble with a consumer, and especially if they're baiting you or something like that. But, you know,
do any credit reporting here, but so I'm going to leave that part alone. But I did think that it was awesome that you kind of picked apart, like when I said about that I don't want my husband to know about it. It's like, oh my gosh, he's going to find out about this. Let's get it taken care of. Identifying that what was important to me was like getting this off my credit and also making sure like it stops here. Kind of poking at that a little bit. I thought that was awesome.
And it was mentioned about asking for a letter, and someone in the chat box mentioned the letter too. I suggest that whenever you're doing some type of letter, you make sure that passes through your review process. Don't just be sending any letter with any language on it, because you have that in writing. And whether you're saying you don't owe any accounts and another account might come in between that time frame, make sure your letters are phrasing specifically to what they want. At this time, no accounts have balances in our agency. Something like that, if they're looking for a paid in full type letter. But just a little mention to be careful. Don't let anybody just send a letter to the consumer. Make sure that these special letters are being printed. They're going through some type of vetting process to make sure the language is appropriate. Like LaDonna said, compliance is a biggie here.
So what about, you know, we talk about letters. When you get that consumer that calls in saying they got a letter, and Christy, this time you be the collector and Irene, you be the debtor.
Okay.
And I'll be the trainer. Here's that situation. Consumer calls in, has got this notice that says, as of April 28th, I owe $450.14. What is this date about? Take it from there.
Okay. So I don't know what this is about. I got this letter saying April 28th, as of April 28th, I owe $450.14. I don't recognize that date. I don't recognize this debt. What, you know, could you
Sure. It looks like we're handling a collection account for XYZ. It was placed in our office on the state. That was our first letter out to you. What other information can I provide to you?
Well, I don't even know what this about. What's this $453 I owe them? I don't understand what that even is.
It looks like this is from a past due balance with XYZ. They had sent you a notice letter out prior to disconnection of your service, and there was no response, so it came to us. Looks like service dates were between this and that. The 28th was the day of disconnection for your cell phone.
Okay, so you're saying that the 28th was a day that it was disconnected. So could you tell me how I owe $453? Like, where did that come from? I never had a bill with that cell phone company ever that was that much money.
Well, it looks like this is including a past due balance, also the disconnection fee and additional fees that are outlined this way. Looks like $200 for a disconnection, for the equipment, and so forth.
Okay, so what if I want to dispute this? Because I don't believe this is accurate.
Sure, you're welcome to dispute that. You should have dispute information on the letter that you received, and you're welcome to send it in there. I can also send you documentation if you'd like to substantiate the balance that's due.
Yeah, I'd like something. What would you be sending me to show me what this balance is? How does it
balance? A breakdown of the payments and the amount owed.
Okay, yeah, I'd like that before I discuss any payment arrangements, since I don't recognize this.
Sure, I can get that out to you. What's your address and confirming your contact information?
Okay, LaDonna, we're down to getting contact information, so.
Well, I think that Christy handled it well. She didn't step on any compliance landmines there. Very factual with the information. And, you know, Irene kept firing back at her, you know, and you didn't even sound exasperated. You kept her cool and, you know, told her what you could do for her. And, you know, disputing is one of those compliance landmines where, you know, we can't have our agents trying to talk over the consumer's dispute. Well, sure, you remember this, your cell phone, and, oh, look, I can give you a discount on this. And the whole while, you know, Irene is, you know, continuing to dispute it. So I thought that was great. And, you know, different agencies are going to have different ways of doing it based on their rules and such. But generally speaking, I thought it was handled well.
Thank you. One of our main, I guess, collection tactics here is to partner with the consumer. Like, how can we find a resolution? Resolutions can be multiple different things in our eyes. If, in fact, this isn't, you know, an error or something like that, we want to get to the bottom of it. So if that means sending out documentation to confirm that this is correct, then we can move to the point of taking care of it. So sometimes, in my opinion, you do have to address what the dispute is before you can even go into payments, not necessarily going to get to that next step until you actually address it. If that means sending out the documentation, which sometimes can be a stall, but sometimes you have to do it to get to the point where you can talk about resolution.
Right. Now, I also, like everybody knows, I basically collect primarily medical debt. So in a situation where it's medical debt, you have other options too that you could say to them to let them know I'm on your side, I want to help you. One of the things is if someone's asking, I don't know what something's about, we tell our collectors to start the conversation with, well, I'd be happy to explain that to you. So, or a phrase similar to that to let them know, I got the answers and let's talk about it. I'd be happy to let you know what this is for. And for instance, if it is for medical, you know, tell them this is the services you received at ABC Hospital, give them the date, January 15th, and then go into the stuff that makes them realize where that balance came from. The original balance was $5,000. After your insurance was processed and payments and adjustments were applied, as of April 28th, when that was done, to tell them that date, your balance is the $450-whatever. Those are your portions for the services. But then we go further to ask, well, you should have received an explanation of benefits from your insurance company further explaining the breakdown of these charges. If you have that with you, I'd be glad to try to explain it to you over the phone. So the idea is you sound like you know what you're talking about. You're explaining a balance that makes sense. You're scaring them a little by saying your original balance was $5,000, because usually that's what it is when it breaks down, to let them know there has been a lot going on before you received that bill. But it's also trying to explain to them, I can help you to understand this. You should have gotten paperwork. It's not my fault you didn't look at it, but guess what? If you look at it now, I'll help you to explain a little bit about what that means. So it puts you in a better light to the consumer, letting them know you have expertise and you are willing to spend the time to spend a minute there to help them to figure it out. because most people don't understand the explanation of benefits. A lot of people, they hear the words, well, this is supposed to be covered. And I try to teach this to clients all the time. I hate when they do a search, you know, they call insurance companies to get pre-authorization, pre-certification, and they call the patient back and they say things like, okay, well, it's a covered service. When they say it's a covered service, all that consumer hears is, oh, I don't know anything. My insurance company is going to pay for it. And we try to explain to them, say to them, well, this is a service that your insurance company does cover under your policy. I suggest you call them to find out what your portion will be. So let them know that covered service doesn't mean you don't know anything. It means they'll process it under the insurance plan, according to the terms of your plan.
All that into one of our scenarios is, you know, insurance. And mm-hmm. you know, a lot of consumers think that, you know, my insurance, I have insurance. I have two insurance.
Magic insurance card. I got this magic insurance card. Pays for everything. I wish. It's not the way it works.
It does kind of bring into the fact of like the educational component of any collections, honestly. Sometimes people just don't understand what the process is and how this part fits into it, or maybe the part they missed, you know, prior to that, and really just taking the time to have that conversation, making sure everybody's on the same page and they're understanding this is how we're to this point here.
Yeah. Well, even saying words like, oh, I understand insurance could be very confusing. Mm-hmm. So you're allowing them to not feel stupid.
Yeah.
Because if you start throwing big words at them, like don't say, you've got an EOB and it should have said there's a contractual adjustment. That was, don't be using words that are going to make them feel like, what do you think I'm stupid? I don't know. But if you say you should have got an explanation of benefits from your insurance company explaining the breakdown of how this is, it's going to be a little bit more on that layman's term where they feel, okay, you're not trying to make me feel stupid. You're actually trying to help me. And that's going to always lead to a better conversation. But simply saying things like, yeah, insurance can be really confusing, but I think I might be able to help you on that. Remember the what's in it for me? Mm-hmm. When you say something to a consumer that's saying, I could say something to help you. I could save you money. I could help explain. Now you're telling them what's in it to them. Just like you explain a consequence, explaining what's in it to them to help them, put you on their side. For that couple of minutes you're on the phone with them, you have this little temporary bond for a moment. And that's going to make that phone call much better.
I do agree with the speaking in language that they can understand, because it can either continue a conversation or that conversation just shuts down. It can be just as plain as they aren't understanding what you're saying. So it is, you know, picking the language around it, even though you are an expert, not using expert language or, you know, acronyms or things like that that maybe aren't public use or public knowledge can shut a conversation down or keep it going. Just depends on which way you're going.
So what about the situation? Okay, so now I'm the debtor here. I'm the consumer and I'm mad because you're trying to collect from me for services that I thought were shoddy. Who's going to collect from me?
Well, you mean like you're upset with the services you had?
Trying to make me
upset by the services that were provided by the original creditor, and maybe you're unwilling to pay the debt because of that.
Yep.
Well, that sounds like a dispute to me that I'd have to investigate before anything. I would tell that person straight off the bat, well, thank you for letting me know. I'll mark your account that you're disputing this. But let me ask you a few clarifying questions so I can look into this for you.
Okay.
Like, because I want to know. If they're right, I don't want to keep collecting on that bill. I have to contact my client first.
Okay. I went to this plastic surgeon because he's got billboards all up and down the interstate and all these flyers clicked out there so he could make me look 20 again. Look. I mean, can you? I have frownies and I still have wrinkles in my forehead and all those things that were supposed to go away didn't go away, and I don't know why y'all are expecting me to pay.
How would you respond to that, Irene?
I would, again, say the same thing, because now this sounds like a dispute. And this would be something that I would want to bring to my client before I moved on, because if you're talking about, especially what you're talking about, could be a malpractice suit. You may not win, but it could be a malpractice suit, which means my client's now going to have to hire a malpractice attorney, because we don't handle malpractice cases. Going to have to hire a malpractice attorney to represent him. I don't want him to be surprised by you filing a suit and then him finding out later on, you told us you threatened this and we didn't communicate that with them. So I would do the same thing. Well, you know what, LaDonna? I'm going to put your account on hold and place it and note it that it's disputed by you. If you can give me a little bit more information about exactly what your dispute is, I'd be glad to contact our client and follow up from there. I can give you a call back, or you can call me back in 30 days and I'll let you know whatever days you want to say. what's going on, but I would not continue to collect that account until my client told me, no, we did the right thing. I don't care. Just go. I don't care if she filed a malpractice suit. Fine. I'll move forward with collections. But until I hear those words out of my client's mouth, I'd stop.
I do think there is something to be said about showing empathy for the situation and also listening with the, I should be kind of persuaded as far as maybe the service was improper or didn't meet standards or whatever it is, and getting or gathering additional information, whether that be, you know, some probing questions with the consumer or, like you said, reaching back out to your client, hey, how do you want me to handle this? You don't want to put them in a bad spot.
And then also know your client too, you know. Know your client, and if you're getting a lot of disputes like this, then maybe you want to turn that portfolio back around.
Yep. Have you guys ever fired a client before? We have. It's not a pretty thing, but we fired a client for giving us such inaccurate information that we were looking bad, and there was nothing we could do to make them stop. No matter how much we work with them, we finally said, "I'm sorry, but we have to fire you."
I'm like, why are you sending accounts that's already been disputed through two other agencies?
Or paid
we're
in full.
We're really good, but you know.
Yeah.
Going back to the previous example, Irene, you were talking about, we have a couple of questions that have come in, so let's circle back. If we can circle back to that. What if you're only given date of service and maybe location? How do you handle the location? How do you handle the conversation then?
Well, if that's all the information I have, then obviously I'm not going to make stuff up. I would tell them, well, this looks like, you know, normally I would imagine you'd at least have who the patient was if it's a medical bill, because it's saying date of service. So I'm assuming medical bill. But I would say, this looks like you received services on January 15th. Does that sound familiar to you? And if it doesn't, you may have to get an itemized statement or something from your client to further explain if there's still nothing. I wasn't there. I mean, but hopefully they're giving you at least patient, because patient explains a lot of those things. We find most of the time when they're saying, I don't remember it, it's because it wasn't them that had the services. It maybe was their minor child, or in a state where spouses are both liable for each other, it was their spouse. Sometimes it is them, but you can't do more than what the information a client gives you. So that would be where it is. Now, if you're purchasing debt and you're not getting all that information, I would be looking at those portfolios a little bit better before you purchase debt. But on contingency, you should be able to get back in touch with your client and gather more information. We look at it like, okay, we want the minimum necessary. We don't want more than that because we don't want our client to send more than they're supposed to send. But at the same time, remember, we can do anything with the consent of the consumer. So if the consumer is saying to me, I need more information, and you have a small script that you have your collectors use, like, so would you like me to get information from the client regarding the data service, the services you had, whatever it is that they're asking for, and they say yes, especially on a recorded line, I would take that as enough to pull that out of my statement from your client and get a little bit more information so you can go back to them and say, okay, we got this. It shows that you received services on this date. It looked like it was a car accident. It was through the emergency room, whatever it was. But now you have more information because they asked for it. So they're giving you that permission. It may be your policy to get it in writing and then say, well, I'm going to fax you over this release form. Whatever your internal policy is and your agreement with your client through your business associate contracts, that would be how I would handle it. So we're back to what Christy was saying before, education. If your staff is educated on what to do when they come across these scenarios, you shouldn't have mistakes.
I'm trying to call your attention to the chat. Okay. It says, if time or anyone's friend, the admissions department, doctor's personnel at the client's office could use a webinar from the agencies about explaining a little more, you know. So what is the healthcare committee working on?
Oh, that's right. I chair the ACA Healthcare Committee. LaDonna knows, she's the board member that is our board liaison for it. But we're actually working on things to help our members have little video audio animated clips. They're going to be fun clips, 3 to 5 minute clips that for you to give our clients, not for you. You could use it for your staff too, but the idea is they're intended for the medical facility to watch and read, to learn these things that we have a hard time with, so they understand more about how to make their accounts more collectible and their staff more educated.
Right.
So be looking for that. They're going to be fun. A lot of the scenarios are just what we're talking about here. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay. And now there's a question. Says, how would you respond to someone asking within the validation period, when would this hit my credit report if I don't pay it right now? If you know the account won't be available to report for 4 months from now, you don't want to tell them 4 months because you lose sense of urgency, but you have to answer the question.
Back to what your policy is in honesty, and remembering that if they're specifically asking you a question and you have an answer, it doesn't matter if you don't like what the answer is. You need to be honest with the answer. We have pop-ups on our screen that actually tell the collector when it's going to report. And they say that, well, it will report sometime, you know, shortly after this date, because it's never an exact science if weekends fall into it and stuff. But you may not like to say 4 months because you lose sense of urgency, but you should instead try to have a different, imply a different sense of urgency for another part of it. You could explain something else that might happen with the account. You could explain interest is continuing to accumulate. You could explain, I could save you some money if we do this now, or I could write this off as a, whatever it is, try to find a different way to imply urgency, but don't avoid telling them the truth if you have that information. You should say it anyway.
I think almost the avoidance of answering the question lowers your credibility a bit if you're skating around a direct question like that. And I do agree that there are other ways to implement urgency, you know, just with a few words, how can we take care of this today? You know, things like that, that are putting that urgency in, although it's always easier to have that leverage, you know, we don't pay it today, it's going on your credit tomorrow. Of course, that'd be like best case scenario type of situation. It just isn't always there. And sometimes I tell my people that sometimes the patience of it, that you might not get a payment that first call, but you don't want to cut your feet off in that first conversation when maybe that next call where you've built the credibility and answered the questions and identified what's stopping them there, that you couldn't swoop in on the next call and get something set up. So you don't want to lose that credibility with that first call, avoiding answering questions that are that direct.
Yeah. Well, just remember, there's other ways to imply urgency without outside of credit reporting.
Someone posted, the good news is as of today, it is not there. And I cannot guarantee any day Equifax, TransUnion, et cetera, will update the file sent to them from all over the country.
That's a good way to answer. You're not really avoiding. That's an honest statement.
Going back to what we were, a previous example, we were talking about someone who was upset at the services. Someone said, I also think it's important to remember that validation does not mean agreement. Mm-hmm. You can empathize with the consumer without talking bad about your client. I'm so sorry you had that experience. I'd be happy to go back to the company and see what we can find out. Is XYZ your current address?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't ignore their feelings. They might have the stupidest dispute in your mind, but it doesn't mean it's stupid in their mind. So you have to acknowledge that this is bothering them and not ignore it. It's only gonna close for an escalated call and a bad conversation.
Sometimes there can be just as easy as acknowledging it and like redirecting to a resolution, but you still do have to acknowledge it. Right. Sometimes just acknowledging it, I understand where you're coming from, you know, something like that. Not necessarily I'm on your side, but I'm acknowledging what you're saying and then redirecting to a resolution. Sometimes that works as long as you're, you know, I hear you, they feel heard. Identifying that you're listening to them is going to be a major part in getting to the next step in call.
Again, all words are sorry. You could say I'm sorry without being sorry for doing something wrong. You could be sorry for their situation. It doesn't mean you're sorry that you're calling them and asking for money to pay their just debt. There's a difference in how you apply the I'm sorry. It doesn't mean you should never say it, but don't say I am sorry, I have to call you now. Don't say anything like that. Saying, oh, I'm sorry to hear about your situation, that's totally different. So it's the same way for what Christy's saying. You can still imply certain things without actually, you know, implying other things that may be negative in your conversation.
But all of these scenarios are the tricky compliance landmines that, you know, we have to work these out within our trainings with our agents, with our new hires, with our ongoing, you know, when we're coaching over quality and just like, you know, Chris Rickman brought up, you know, small, you know, vignettes of training and constant reinforcement of that, you know, coming up with these, you know, with these scenarios and, you know, have a little fun with it so that, you know, the agents can have fun with it as well. You know, always say there's not a debtor story you could tell that I haven't heard. You know, I can't say that I handled every call well, but pretty much heard all of them, you know?
Yeah, and you learn from everyone, right?
Yeah.
You learn something from everyone. Yeah. Just I hope you do. Otherwise, you repeat mistakes all the time.
Yeah.
All right. We can do one of two things with the last 10 minutes. We can discuss the scenario where someone wants to ask if they can pay a bill online. You know, can you email me the information and how to respond in that situation? Or we can go around the panel. Each of you can share what you think your most unique or challenging call you've ever had in your career is. What would you prefer?
I could think of about 1,000 calls that were unique and challenging. I see people are saying that Natalie said challenging. They're all saying challenging calls.
All right, challenging calls.
Oh, Lord. Okay. The audience wins it.
Who has a challenge? Which is among between the three, who has a challenging call you want to share?
Well,
yeah, that wasn't challenging. Well, it was challenging, but I mishandled it. And you know,
I can't say you're right, LaDonna.
One of my knacks when I was an agent and as a supervisor was I was able to de-escalate situations pretty quickly and have consumers laughing and feeling good about it. But I took this call from this elderly man, you know, he was generations ahead of me. So that ought to tell you something. He'd been through the whole office and I'm talking, you know, I could tell right away that, you know, he didn't think that women should be in the workplace. And I'm talking, you know, mildly and calmly and yes, sir, yes, sir. And I still couldn't give him what he wanted. And I, you know, explained to him, you know, what processes were, what the client's process was, you know, et cetera. And he just felt like that there was somebody that could give him the answer he wanted. And so he said, let me talk to your superior. Now, I'd been on the phone with this guy for 5 minutes, and that was 4.5 minutes too long. And I said, excuse me, sir, what do you mean my superior? Now, I knew what he meant because I knew the generation he was coming from. He said, the person that's superior to you. I go, sir, no one is superior to me.
LaDonna answer.
But, you know, I wasn't really, I mean, he got even more mad and he hung up on me. And so the next day he calls in and, you know, it gets to my boss and he's like, so I'm not superior to you. And I was like, hell no, you're not superior. But, you know, it's, my point is there are consumers out there that push our buttons and that goes back to the training of the agents and letting them know that there's people out there, they're going to push your buttons and say things that are going to get you all up in arms and don't do it, you know?
Well, asking for just one is tough, Mike. That's not fair. If anybody ever heard me speak about anything, you know, you might have already heard my story about the guy who told me I was practicing slavery. I had a contagious guy. I had people who told me they hope I die of medical bills after I couldn't get their insurance to pay more. Or I've been asked on dates. I've been called back to back and hung up over and over again. I've created budgets for consumers. I mean, the list just goes on forever and ever and ever. But there was one that I could say, it wasn't so much challenging, but it was thinking outside the box a little bit. I spoke to a recently retired person. So she just retired. She was about my age, actually. She was previously paying about $25 a month on a halfway decent sized bill, not huge, not small. And she just stopped. So I figured, okay, I'm going to give this one more call. She's retired. We don't usually file legal action on anybody who, you know, doesn't have a regular earned income. But I asked her, you know, why'd you stop paying this? You were paying every month on time. It was only $25, but she was paying. And she told me that the interest was growing faster than her payments were paying it off. And she felt it was useless to just keep paying. So I asked her if that was the only reason why she stopped sending those payments. And she said, yeah, I don't mind paying for their services. I hate the fact that I'm not paying the doctor. He's so great. I feel like I'm letting him down. But I just feel like it's stupid to keep paying when the balance just isn't going down. So I told her I understood. I said, I definitely can understand how you feel. That would make sense. I said, but I think I could help you. And I tried to think of it outside the box because in my opinion, I'm saying, all right, this account's going to go to trash. This is my last call I'm going to make on this account. So I'm going to give it one shot and see what happens. So I offered her to waive 100% of the interest if she kept paying that $25. I told her she can call anytime, get her principal balance, but as long as she makes those payments, once the principal balance is paid in full, I guaranteed her that I'd write off 100% of the interest. And I also told her that sometimes she gets some extra money and she wants to settle it, she can call and I'd be happy to negotiate with her because she's keeping a current payment plan. I could probably give her a better settlement offer. And what made me happy was how happy she was. she was like, really, you would do that to me? I said, of course. Why would I not do that to you? You want to pay this off. Let me help you. And about 10 months later, because she did, she started paying her $25 again. And I didn't care. I was just happy that no collector was seeing this account. And, you know, if anybody ever did, it would just go to trash. But no collector was ever seeing the account. But 10 months later, she called me up again and she told me, wanted to thank me. She just came across some money. She made a settlement offer. I took it, waived everything else. And then she said to me, you know, up until then, it was embarrassing to even go back to the doctor's office because I knew I wasn't paying. And it just, but I love my doctor, but it made me feel really bad. So I want to thank you, because if it wasn't for you saying that to me, I probably wouldn't have paid this. But now when I go to my doctor's office, I don't feel embarrassed anymore. I feel really good that I took care of that responsibility. And I thought that was pretty great. And the only reason why that happened was because I was ready to get rid of the account, but I tried to look at what is going to trigger her. What is her reason? By asking questions to find out, she didn't mind paying that little payment plan. She just thought it was stupid because of the interest, but there was no other reason why she wasn't making payments. It's all she could afford. She was trying her best. I not only got her to pay it by making her happy, but I wound up getting a $2,000 settlement at the time. She wound up getting her bill paid and felt good about herself. And my client has another paid in full account, all because I thought outside the box a little bit and asked some questions to her. And I think that we forget that. We forget that these are people out there, and there is something that you need to find out what triggers their need to get rid of this. So this call wasn't that it was so challenging, but it was more like thinking outside the box before we just got rid of it. I wouldn't want a $25 payment plan on every account, and I'm not lying, but I didn't want to see this account again ever. I wanted it to be off the desk and never see it again. And it worked. And everybody was happy with it.
She ain't lying. Christy, what's that?
I don't know that I have a, I'll be quick about it, but I don't know if I have like a specific call or anything like that. But I do know that my biggest challenge for not only myself, and it's true, but even for the people that I'm training, is to make sure they're not getting their emotions into it. Kind of like you were talking about the gentleman, like saying the things like completely inappropriate, and understanding like they don't know you.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, more upset with the situation and taking more of a calm approach. Because sometimes people will say things and I'm like, what did you just say? You know, in my head, making sure that that's not coming across, even if that's not what I'm saying, my tone can change sometimes, and just recognizing that I'm not going to get anywhere with that. But sometimes I feel like even though I know that, it's still challenging sometimes, especially when I've, you know, heard the same type of thing multiple times in the day. It's like, I'm not necessarily listening fatigue, but like one more person says this, I swear, you know, but just that's challenging just because I'm a person too, you know, and like making sure that I just keep my emotions out of it and help my reps keep their emotions out of everything. Like they don't know you. It's nothing personal. This is not always easy to do.
And you don't have to win every conversation. It's okay.
Exactly.
I just think that all agencies need to have consistency, because all three of us, even though we're schooled with some of the same trainings, we could evaluate a call and have different scores.
Yep.
You know, definitely. So I think consistency within your organization is what's key. And that comes from your training, and just keep reemphasizing that to your staff, because we're going to have those challenging calls. You know, we're going to have those consumers who say things that, you know, we're like, ooh, that one stumped me. Let me
talk. Because they become good stories later on for Mike's panels. That's all.
That's right. See, it's always something to always another time to talk about it. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. We've reached the top of the hour. This has been great. LaDonna, Christy, Irene, you know, speaking personally, role playing is not something I'd ever be really comfortable with. So to watch the three of you do it and do it really well, it is incredibly impressive. So I want to thank each of you for coming on and participating today. I think this is really insightful, really helpful. And I think that, you know, everybody walked away with some really interesting ideas and new insights into how to handle some common and uncommon calls. So thanks to each of you for being here. Really appreciate it. Chris, I want to thank you and Peak Revenue Learning one last time for sponsoring today's webinar. Everyone go to peakrevenuelearning.com and check them out. And thanks to everybody who participated today. Great comments, great questions, great engagement from everybody. Really appreciate that. That's going to do it for today. We're back tomorrow. We've got a webinar at 1:00 on how to teach collectors to be great negotiators, another important skill for collectors. If you haven't signed up for that yet, you can find the link on the events calendar of accountsrecovery.net. So hope to see you back for that tomorrow. Until then, Enjoy the rest of your day, everybody. Have a great evening, and we look forward to seeing everybody soon. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.